This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, it's Reporters Roundtable, and we have with us as a contributing guest, John Gard with the News Dispatch and the Herald Argus in Port County. We also have Giles Bruce, along with his colleagues, Bob Casarda and Joseph Pete from the Times of Northwest Indiana, talking about some of the stories, major stories of the week, which include, of course, not only the Strachan Van Til story, but also the implications about the Methodist Hospital and Franciscan Alliance merger. On this Reporters Roundtable Thursday, let's turn first to Giles Bruce with the Times of Northwest Indiana. Thanks for joining us today, Giles.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We had a number of stories here dealing with Methodist Hospital and the proposed merger between Methodist and the Franciscan Alliance. And let's take up the first one here, the comments not long ago that the Methodist CEO Ray Grady had to say, his take, at least publicly lately here, on what kind of impact that the merger would have on Gary.
Yeah, well, he spoke at a Gary Chamber of Commerce meeting on Monday and, basically outlined how much of a economic boon he thought this would be to the city. Franciscan and is proposing building a $300 million new hospital in Gary near the Indiana University Northwest campus. And he said that would be the biggest investment in the city of Gary in nearly 40 years, thinking that it can bring in a lot of jobs and attract other businesses to that area and make it kind of a medical education corridor that could really, boost the economy there in Gary.
In the comments that he made and had a chance to listen in on the conversation, were there any surprises or anything that you learned that you didn't already know, at least about the proposed merger?
I learned a couple things. He basically said that it would be a carbon copy of the hospital that Franciscan is building in Michigan City on the interstate there. He said it would take about 4 years to complete. So he said the merger talks will probably go through the end of this year. So then, you figure another 4 years after that possibly a new hospital could be up and running in Gary.
I know he had spent time talking in the past year about the impact that hospitals like Methodist, with only two hospitals, basically, Gary and Maryville, have in days with all this competition and continuing consolidation. So that was one of the things I know that they must have looked at very closely when they considered anything that might have been offered by the Franciscan Alliance. And I'm saying that they will go ahead and do what they can to expand and make sure that the hospitals are still standing. And now they're talking, of course, now here about a new facility closer to within Gary to the IU Northwest campus. It'll be interesting to see what comes about here. One of the other stories I know that you spent the most amount of time and research on was a story talking about the potential effects that the combination of the Franciscan Alliance hospitals and the two Methodist hospitals here in Lake County would have on what kind of medical care would be allowed in certain cases here in Northwest Indiana. Tell us about the people that you talked to, the information that you got from them about family members that maybe not necessarily looking for any kind of birth control modifications, but they've got issues they want to deal with, and they've been told that if the merger goes through, that they're not likely to be able to go to the places they want to go.
Yeah, this is a concern I've been hearing for for a few months now from activists and doctors and residents about how, this would basically, leave Lake County with just one non-Catholic hospital that would be community hospital. But, the two Methodist hospitals, if they were to merge with Franciscan, would become part of, a Catholic hospital system and then would have to follow the Catholic, ethical and religious directives on health care. And that prohibits, birth control and sterilizations and abortions and euthanasia. I mean, a lot of these things Methodist didn't perform before, things like elective abortions or euthanasia, obviously. But women would no longer be able to get their tubes tied at Methodist, or men couldn't get vasectomies. There are also some issues like the woman I quoted at the end of the story. She had had a pregnancy complication that essentially created a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. But because of the Catholic directives at the hospital she went to, they refused to give her a drug that would have induced her pregnancy and ended it prematurely. But the baby, was essentially going to die anyways. But because of this, they basically had to wait it out until the baby, his heartbeat and stopped on its own. And she said the baby, she claims that it likely suffered because of those directives. So, that's something that some people there are concerned about if, people no longer have those health care options in Gary or Maryville.
Mm. And I know in the story you also mentioned, too, about the fact that we talk here mainly about reproductive care, but this, the combining of the hospitals in Gary and Maryville along with the rest of the Franciscan Alliance system locally would also have other impacts as well. Tell us about the people you talked to about those issues if the two hospital systems, rather, joined.
There's also some, there would also be some impacts on end-of-life care. The Catholic directives, state that they're, doctors aren't supposed to be giving treatments that would, cause consciousness to go away, and end of life care. So that can impact potentially how much, pain medication is given or palliative care. Then again, a lot of these things I've heard from talking to people are that, they kind of go by doctor. So, and then there's also ethics committees at the hospital that get together and discuss things that are kind of a gray area that, aren't completely clear under the directives. So, so it's not black and white, but it sounds like there will be, impacts on the type of care that's provided in those communities.
You talked about the problems that people have had in turn being cared for, doing procedures that they felt they needed, maybe medically as well as personally that they've asked for. And you talked too, I guess, about some of the impacts that the combining of the hospitals would have on at least what we have now. And I'm going to lead into the next topic that you take up in another story, which is the Affordable Care Act. Tell us about the concerns here that the people may have about what would happen in this as far as the mandates that the ACA still have in place until something happens as far as Congress is concerned.
Yeah, well, this is something that it's not unique to Indiana, but a lot of insurers are leaving the marketplace for Obamacare, which is the healthcare.gov, where people can go to buy individual policies. People who don't get healthcare through Medicaid or through their employer, that's where they go and get these policies that are subsidized by the government. But because of, I guess it depends on who you ask what's causing the problems. Both the parties blame the other party, but, insurers are bailing out of these marketplaces because of uncertainty and they're not, they're losing money. So Northwest Indiana, it looks like next year we'll be down to only one insurer, much of Northwest Indiana, Lake and Porter counties, will just have a company called Managed Health Services. And one of the issues with them is that they're not currently under contract with community healthcare system, which is right now the largest hospital system in the region. So, people who have this Obamacare policy wouldn't be a network for community.
Do you get the impression that there's some talks that might be underway here if to get this managed health services together to join into the Indiana marketplace that include all the hospitals here in the region?
Not that I've heard yet, but it's a possibility because I know that they negotiate these contracts every year, so that could be a possibility. By the time that these policies go into effect next year, currently they're not part of that network.
One of the other stories that you covered here, Giles, for the Times here recently, again talking about healthcare matters, it involves, rankings the state of Indiana didn't do so well on as far as long-term care is concerned. Tell us who conducted the study and what the results turned out to seem to put Indiana in such a bad light.
Yeah, this was a study done by that was conducted by AARP, the Commonwealth Fund, and the SCAN Foundation, and it basically did a scorecard for all of the 50 states and District Columbia in terms of the quality of their long-term care for seniors and people with disabilities. And Indiana came in last, basically had the worst rating on that in that study. So it looked at areas like affordability of that care, access to care, the availability of community-based services, so the ability for people to get these services in their home and avoid having to go to the nursing home. That was one area where Indiana ranked pretty poorly. There's a lot of people going into long nursing home stays that potentially could stay in the home longer if more of these services were available in Indiana. Some people I talk to say it's a matter of funding, of they just not providing the funding for these services, and other people told me it has to do with this issue being run by several different agencies, so there could be some streamlining that could potentially make this system more effective. But either way, it's not a good rating for the state.
One other thing that they mentioned in the article, talking about the rankings and how Indiana fared so poorly, was about a new law, House Bill 1493. Tell us about that, and we have some local lawmakers that have chimed in on this as well, too.
There were a couple of our local lawmakers who were involved in sponsoring that. It looks like Senator Ed Charbonneau Senator, Lonnie Randolph, Lonnie Randolph as well. It instructs the Indiana Division of Aging to, develop a plan that would increase these community and home-based services, because, obviously the state is recognizing that they lack, and it is, often cheaper to keep people at home and out of the nursing home, and a lot of people obviously prefer to age in place in their home as opposed to an institutional setting. So, this basically just it doesn't fund or create this plan. It just directs the state agency to develop this plan, and then the state, from the looks of it, would potentially implement it once they get it developed.
Mm-hmm. I understand, too, that State Representative Charlie Brown here in Gary is concerned as well, too. He basically talked about the fact that things hadn't been planned for financially for a long time, and it's had an impact.
Yeah, well, his contention is that, the state, often brags about how, it has this $2 billion in budget reserve and is in, great, fiscal shape, but then he contends that it doesn't spend money on the elderly or even young people, infants, when it comes to public health measures, because Indiana ranks poorly in a lot of health measures, not just long-term care. And his contention is that the state should put up some of this money that it has in savings to protect some of the most vulnerable Hoosiers.
Well, from what you can tell in talking with the sources for this story, what do they seem to think, at least about the plan that is now in the Senate to try to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act?
They were concerned that, if Indiana's doing poorly now when it comes to long-term care, if the plan to repeal and replace Obamacare goes through, that the state will be even worse shape because most people who require long-term care for, either because of age or because of a disability or on Medicaid, and, some of the analyses of the Senate's plans and the House plan show that it would cut, hundreds of millions of dollars to the Medicaid program, so that would potentially, leave a lot of people in need of long-term care without, coverage.
We've been talking with Giles Bruce, who covers, among other topics, healthcare issues here in Northwest Indiana for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Giles, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your comments and great stories we've had a chance to talk about, and hope that we'll have you back again when you have some more to talk about online and in print as well, too.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Let's turn now to Bob Cassardo with the Times of Northwest Indiana for some of the stories that he has worked on that we hear here on Reporters Roundtable. One of them is about Willow Creek Road, a very busy highway in Porter County. And there's talk, I understand, Bob, and looking into the study of extending Willow Creek Road. Tell us why it's so desperately needed to be a little longer.
Well, this project has been talked about for many, many years, and it's just resurfaced recently with some new leaders here in Porter County. And the need is clear. I mean, when you come into Porter County, there's only really one direct shot from the north end of the county down to 30, and that's Indiana 49. There's other ways of meandering your way through, including County Line Road once you get near Lake County, but no other direct shot, and I think they just see the potential and the great need. You know, they widened Willow Creek Road through Portage several years ago, and anybody who's been traveling through there recently will know that it's a very busy roadway. So this would, they figure, it would just open up commerce. It would actually dealing with some flooding issues through there as they would go through with this roadway to address flooding issues. So it could have a lot of different positive benefits.
Now, you mentioned in the story that's in the Times online and in print, of course, about the fact that the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission is very, very interested in making sure that this project would get done. But I guess it's just on the short-term basis right now, or is it on the overall long-term plans?
Well, it shows up in two of NERPC's areas, one with the 2040 plan, which is a 25-year plan looking out over how Northwest Indiana should be developed overall. But they ranked it really high on an area of, you know, when they're looking at roads that really need to be finished, you know, to improve the connections in the area. And this one actually ranks third on that list. So it's got a really high priority there.
But what are the other two that are ahead of it then?
Well, the other one is Main Street, as it would extend from the Munster-Dyer area then into Illinois, you know, so heading towards the west there. And then number two is the extension of Klein Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would they be extending Klein Avenue? Would that be, say, the area south out of Griffith, point south? Because we know it goes so far, for all the way from the steel mills, basically, south, but then it stops for a while.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure with that one. I just know that was high on their priority list.
That's interesting.
Well,
certainly Willow Creek Road is certainly would be a good one to extend on here for that reason alone, as you say. That it's probably going to be not only save wear and tear on the highway that's now existing, but I'm sure it would also probably make it a lot easier for the city of Valparaiso to deal with traffic coming through the area too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. You know, it's really Willow Creek Road. You know, it begins up at 20, and then right now stops at 700, which is really just a short distance south of US 6. But there's the Chrisman Road that comes in way up off of 12, pulls in like entrances, exit off of 94, mm-hmm. comes through 20. You can pick up the tollway. So there's all these major highways that access, that flow right into this direct sweep that could take you straight down to 30. So really has the potential of even having greater traffic, I think, than 49, depending on what they do with it.
Okay. Now, Bob, I know in the research you did and talking with the officials about this for the story that ran in the Times, you talk about not only, of course, the long-term and the short-term plans and putting it there to make sure that the project does get done, but what is the process right now in being able to actually get this thing started?
Well, they would need to do some type of feasibility study or to actually figure out the route. And NERPC says it has some money available. The county isn't quite ready to pull the trigger yet. They're waiting to see. They recently unveiled a $30 million capital improvement plan involving many of its own facilities and some bridges here. So they're waiting to kind of see what the county council does with that funding-wise first. And they're also looking to Washington because there's talk apparently of more highway money being available next year, and they're waiting to see if that takes shape before deciding, because this would be a very expensive project that would have to be funded primarily with federal dollars. 80-20 is how they do that, 20% local money, 80% federal money.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the Porter County Commissioners would have to take a look at this if they do really are serious about doing the extension of Willow Creek Road south, that they'd have to take a look at the capital improvement plan and see if they can carve some money out of that for this?
Well, that would have to be. I mean, that's not a part. This project is not a part of that $30 million plan. But it depends how they would arrange the funding for that. to decide whether they could go ahead with this one or not. But there's hope, you know, and as I believe that they've been talking with folks in Washington, too.
That's good. You know, I know I had an extended, about a 20-minute-long conversation with Jeff Good about the capital improvement plan, and he did talk about all the work that was proposed for bridges and also all the buildings, including the Expo Center, the County Administration Center, the courthouses, and not only downtown Valparaiso, but Portage as well. So there are a lot of other things that are on the list there, so I see they would have to spend some time and take a look at the information here. We're talking with Bob Casarda with the Times of Northwest Indiana. He's based out of the Times newsroom in Valparaiso and covers Porter and LaPorte counties and events and news. One other story, Bob, that you had recently, it was a very interesting one about drug-laced gummy bears. Tell us about that.
The drug-laced gummy bears. Yeah, there was a call last Thursday of 11 young people, actually, who were in distress after consuming just half of one of these gummy bears. Police are unsure yet where they got the gummy bears, but these are not uncommon in the states, Colorado and elsewhere, where marijuana is legal for recreation purposes and or for medical reasons.
Do you think that maybe somebody went out west and brought a few back?
Well, they're looking forward to that right now, or looking into that right now. All the young people involved, the 18, 19-year-olds, are all from Fishers, Indiana, so they're not from this area. So whether, you know, they're trying to determine yet where they got these from and actually what was in them. They're fairly sure that they have the THC, which is the active ingredient for marijuana, in them because a couple of the young people had tested positive for high levels of THC when they were taken to the hospital. But, you know, everybody recovered from it. There was nothing but, complaints of hallucinations, racing heartbeats, that type of thing.
I guess the question comes in, how did this stuff end up in LaPorte County? If these folks are from Fishers, which is just north of Indianapolis, and somebody got them from out west, wherever it's prevalent out there, they had to make a stop someplace along the way.
They did, yeah. They were here camping, apparently, and one of the, you know, and the entire group sounded like they were having some problems, but only one, you know, one had went and called police, and sought help. But police they're still investigating this and trying to determine, you know, what had happened.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. Thank you very much for that. We're talking with Bob Casarda with the Times of Northwest Indiana, and we appreciate you spending time with us today to talk about these stories that you had in the newspaper, online, and in print as well, too. And by the way, we hope to talk with John Gard today from the News Dispatch of Michigan City and the LaPorte Herald Argus on stories he's been working on, but he got called away on assignment, so we'll have to catch him another day. And on this Reporter Roundtable Thursday, we turn to Joseph Pete, who's the major business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Joseph, thank you very much for being with us, and you have a number of stories, and a lot of them have to do with something that is very near and dear to region residents' hearts, or maybe I should say their stomachs would be probably a better way to put it, shouldn't I? We're talking food, folks. We're talking Strachan Van Til in particular, and this has been an ongoing story, apparently, that's been going on for quite some time here, and I know that you've had updates constantly, it seems like, as things develop from the bankruptcy court, as well as from New York City, where I guess these auctions took place to deal with the stores that Central Grocers of Joliet's giving up. Tell us, first, if you want to set the stage about how this all got started, I guess maybe we should say, even I guess going back to what, a number of years ago when Strachan Van Til sold the stores out to Central Grocers.
Yes, Central Grocers, it's a wholesale grocery cooperative, and it's currently going bankrupt and out of business. But it's for years and years, its business was based on providing the independent, like, neighborhood grocers throughout Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana, places like the Save More on Broadway and Gary, the Central Market in downtown Lake Station, and a lot of, like, corner stores up in the city with a co-op a co-op that would give them kind of buying power to have, relatively cheap groceries, more than, you know, each store could get themselves through a wholesaler. And they were, Strachan Van Til has always been among their biggest customers. Back in the 90s, Strachan Van Til accounted for more than a quarter of their, at the time, their 400 millionaire plus business.
Wow.
And they were looking to, they wanted to ensure Strachan Van Til's long-term longevity, so they entered into where they purchased a controlling stake of about 80% in them. The original Strachan Van Til families did retain, you know, part of the ownership, but it's, you know, they were in charge at that point in 97, and they've Under their ownership, the company has grown tremendously. The Strachan Van Til did have maybe like 10 locations in 2000. That grew to as many as 38 in recent years. They had acquired a bunch of the, as a lot of grocery chains have gone under, they ended up buying out a lot of like the Cub Foods in the Illinois suburbs. They bought, they've acquired Wiseway, Palo. They've kept growing as they've picked up a lot of the grocery stores out of bankruptcy. And they grew into one of the largest grocers in the Chicagoland area. And then, there's been Central Grocers ran into some financial trouble. They're kind of based on a lot of their, a lot of their, Strax accounted for more than half their business. It was a $1 billion a year company. But a lot of these corner stores in Chicago and everything, they've been kind of like, they've been less competitive in an era where there are these like Super Marianos, there are these giant Targets, there's all this competition to the grocery store. You can even go into like an Office Depot now and they'll have bottled water and K-cups and, they'll have grocery items like right up front. The ton of people are getting into this. It's become increasingly competitive over the years. So they started to struggle and they racked up more than $225 million in debt. And their creditors were very unhappy. Very large companies like General Mills, Coca-Cola, some of the biggest Mars, some of the biggest companies you'll see with items on the shelves. They sued in May to force Central Grocers into bankruptcy, like an involuntary bankruptcy. And Central Grocers responded 2 days later by doing a Chapter 11 of their own. They had been looking for a buyer since December. They're looking to someone to buy all or part of the assets. When it became clear that wouldn't happen, they started closing off a lot of the Ultra Foods and even some Strachan Van Til stores. But at this point, almost all the Ultra Foods in Illinois are closed, including the Lansing one that they just pumped like millions of dollars into renovating. They added like a sushi bar. It was very, very nice in there. But they've been closing those stores left and right. And then there was, these Strachan Van Til stores are still very profitable and they're still very desirable. Jewel had put in a bid for $100 million to purchase them out of bankruptcy. And it's because, they have a lot of, a lot of them have a lot of longevity. They have a lot of goodwill in the community. They have a built-up customer base. The stores that are remaining are very strong stores, and but through the bankruptcy court, the Van Til and the Strack families, the original founding families led by Strack and Van Til CEO Jeff Strack, decided they didn't want to see their company. They didn't want to lose their company. They didn't want the brand to go away. They came together and mounted a bid to purchase it back, and they found out Tuesday that they were successful. And it's up for like a hearing next Tuesday, but that's kind of more of a that's required as part of the formal process, but it's kind of a, it's expected that this is definitely going to go through. And they had the highest and the best bid, and they have been ecstatic. Jeff Strack has been doing kind of like a victory tour, going to different supermarkets to celebrate. Like the corporate offices, they're very happy. They get to keep their jobs. If Jewel had purchased it, I mean, all the jobs at that corporate office on 45th Street would have been wiped out if Jewel. They didn't want it. They weren't going to buy it. They had no need for it. They have their corporate offices, like, maybe 40 miles from here in Ithaca. Like, they, they would have preserved the jobs in the stores, but this is keeping a very beloved local brand in the community. People have a very strong affinity for this brand. People have been shopping at some of these stores for decades. Mm-hmm. The family dates back even further because even in their own right, Ernie Strack and Nick Van Til were very successful grocers before they came together and formed that flagship store on Klein Avenue and 45th and Highland. They were both very well-known in the Northwest Indiana grocery community.
I remember going visiting in-laws up here after first getting married, and my mother-in-law would send me over to Strax, to that Strack there at 45th and Klein Avenue. We're talking, 40-plus years now. And even today, I go to the same Strax because that's the store that's closest to where I live. And there are so many people in Northwest Indiana that feel the same way, too, about the Strack and Van Til name as the service that they've received over the decades. Now, tell us a little bit about this Indiana Grocery Group. And that has now been formed here by this combination of the Strax and the Van Tils getting together and taking it back into the family.
Yes, and there are a few other investors as well. More of that will come out later, but it's the Schreck family, the Van Til family, and some other investors, and they partnered together to reacquire the stores, which has been pretty much outside of the family's control for decades now. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Schreck was named CEO of the Schreck and Van Til last year. However, you know, they were a subsidiary company of Central Grocers, which was which is going away completely now. The Centralia brand, everybody's familiar with the generics, that's going to be gone, you know, as soon as they start to sell out of, you know, all those, the Centralia pitted olives, Centralia coffee, Centralia paper towels.
Yeah, there's a lot of
water,
of,
whatever.
A lot of home brand names like that, items that they're probably going to sell off and be able to get rid of too. So how many stores are going to, at least as things shape up right now, are going to be within the group?
Yes, there are currently 22 stores that are left open. It's been quite a tough year. They're going to run 20 of them. The only ones, it's pretty much all the Schreck and Van Til, that are currently open, as well as the Two Town and Countries in Portage and Valparaiso, and then the Ultra Foods on Broadway by just south of Antran High School there in Maryville. And then they're also going to keep the headquarters and a commissary in Valparaiso. The two stores that are that were not included in this were the Ultra in Highland, which has been a big staple since 1981. That was the original Ultra, in fact, and it's been it was a very popular shopping destination, especially with like North County residents. But they're currently still trying to auction that off, but that's not part of the deal. And then there's also an Ultra that they recently opened in Kankakee, Illinois. That it was not part of the deal. I'm not sure as the circumstances of the Ultra one, but or the Kankakee one, but the one would have to wonder with the Highland one, because they drew a lot of business in from Hammond and East Chicago and Whiting and so forth. It was like right off the Borman, but they just built a new Super Walmart just like a mile up the street, even closer to the interstate. So that might have really affected the business at that particular location.
And we've talked about this before in our past conversations about this, and I know that as the Ultra stores in Illinois closed, closer they got to the state line, I suspect that the residents that were definite diehard Ultra shoppers had to end up coming to that store in Highland there at US 41 and Ridge Road to do their shopping if they wanted to, you know, keep it in the family there, I suppose. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see who, if it comes up for auction, if anybody's interested in buying that store, because that definitely would be one. I was kind of hoping that maybe Jeff Strack would have taken that one into the fold, but he has one of the other Ultra stores that he wants to take on, so we can't fault him for that, I suppose.
Yes, it was that was the bid that they had put in. It's not inconceivable, like, you know, maybe in the future they'll, but I haven't had a chance to talk to them yet as far as like long-term plans. It's still possible they could acquire it, but the bid of what they're trying to acquire right now is the 20 stores, which is pretty much all the ones that Jewel wanted, plus the one in the Ultra in Maryville.
Now, if you will tell us about you had a brief conversation, I understand, at least with Jeff Strack, and certainly giving us a little bit of background, his feelings, I guess, after the word came out that Central Grocers was going to go bankrupt and was going to basically have to sell off all of the stores that they had, the ones that Jeff Strack's family members, as well as the Van Til's, had turned over to them. Tell us what Jeff seems to think, and at least the impression you got looking to the future there.
Yes, he said it's been extremely difficult for the family to kind of watch this happen, to see their, you know, the loss of these jobs, the loss of the loss of the jobs, to see the stores closing, to see their brand potentially go away, that their families and their grandparents spent all this time building up. And then, but he said, you know, he felt like he was afraid that in 10 or 15 years, if he didn't try to buy them back, it would be like he'd be haunted with regret. There'd be this missed opportunity. So they put in this is a very difficult, like, bankruptcies take literally, you know, this has been playing out for months. It's a very involved, in-depth process. It's been, you know, very difficult for them to do this. They've had to line up financing, all those kind of things. There are a lot of hurdles to clear. But when they finally found out, like, they're, you know, they've been waiting for hours, and they finally found out, and then it was he described it as like a sense of relief, plus just being ecstatic, and he wanted to just go back right away to the corporate office in Highland and tell them, you know, your jobs are saved. We're keeping this in the family. Like, he wanted to get, you know.
I'd heard some indication from, and of all people, one of the employees at one of the stores that I happened to be at, we were just talking about things, and he was mentioned about the fact that that Jeff Strack was interested in taking the company back. And so I thought, well, that would be a good idea. That would be, you know, certainly very, very appropriate here, and I'm sure that everybody was rooting for him to be able to do so. It's nice that he would have the opportunity to bring it back. So there are just some loose ends, obviously, that have to be taken care of. You mentioned here about this bankruptcy court hearing on Tuesday. Did you get any indication that if everything goes through as they're expecting, how long that it'll officially become then part of the Strack and Van Til family once again?
That still needs to be settled. I should have more on that soon, but mm-hmm. I'm not immediately clear on that at this point. There will be Central Grocers will be disappearing soon. As soon as the bankruptcy thing is wrapped up, they're intending on completely like winding down their Joliet warehouse and winding down all of their operations. So I assume it would have to be pretty fast because there'll be no one left to run it at that point if it's not run locally, because they were looking at aggressively like going out of business and like 6 to 8 weeks or so,
yeah.
And it's just the bankruptcy process is like drawn out and protracted, but they're unfortunately like laying off all their people in the warehouse out there in Joliet, and then wow. They're just all these independent grocery stores here, like Central Market or some of those, like the Produce Market in Hammond, like they've been scrambling to find new suppliers. AWG, I guess, has been supplying a lot, but they've needed to find, it's been a real struggle for grocery stores across Northwest Indiana, any of the smaller independent ones. They've had to find new people to supply the produce, to supply the meat, to supply a lot of the staples.
They were getting those from General Grocers was supplying all those. I was just wondering too that you mentioned about the smaller operations. One comes to mind is Walt's, which has most of their stores in Illinois, but they still have, of course, one store in Indiana there in Dyer. I'm sure they've been probably very worried, looking very carefully at what might happen here with the Central Grocers about the bankruptcy.
Oh yes, absolutely. Like Walt's, I'm not sure if Alice Supermarkets is part of it.
They
but
might be,
I, yeah. I believe Walt's was actually part of, because it was co-opted. It was owned. Like these, they relied on Central Grocers as their supplier, but they also owned it. They mm-hmm. all owned a small share or whatever. And then they know what's going on. They've had time to adjust, but it's a matter of, you need to line up and you need to find favorable contracts, and then the suppliers know, you're going to hurry to, find a replacement wholesaler. It's just a matter of, it's a logistical nightmare if you've been getting your ground beef and pork for like 50 years from the same place, and then all of a sudden it, vanishes nearly overnight, and then you need to... That's something they need to work out. But there are multiple other wholesalers serving the Chicago. This is obviously, we're in one of the largest markets in the entire country
this.
And then, because that's Central Grocers is relatively small in this era of like Super Walmarts and those kind of things in terms of scale. But it was a huge, huge company. It was the seventh largest grocery wholesaler in the entire country, and just bought in the business of, like in this local area. And that's nothing to sneeze at. But it's we're reaching such a people demand such low prices these days that it forces these wholesalers and some of these retailers to just get bigger and bigger and bigger in scale so they can negotiate like the lowest possible prices. And it's hurt the companies that were part of Central Grocers, like this the smaller independent grocery stores that was maybe one or two locations or a couple at most.
We're talking with Joe Pete, who is business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, here on Regionally Speaking's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. We've been spending a lot of time, of course, talking about the major business news here in Northwest Indiana, certainly of the week and probably even more, about Strack and Van Til's. It's all part of, as we say, the Central Grocers bankruptcy, and now the Strack and Van Til family have gotten together again, I'm sure, with some other organizations involved as well, to create what is going to be called Indiana Grocery Group, in turn taking over a good chunk of the Strack and Van Til stores here in Northwest Indiana and bring them back keep them under the family name, I should say, and bring it back under local ownership, as what might have been the case had things gone the way of Jewel and Osco. One of the other things I know that has come up here and you've written stories on is the continuing loss of businesses in Northwest Indiana. One of them, of course, is the major story that has come out. It makes the national news every time that Sears decides to close more stores. And we have more here in Northwest Indiana that are closing. One in particular, I guess, following up just down the street from another of the Sears operations is closing. Tell us about the latest closing in Sherrifville.
Yes, unfortunately, Sears has been on death watch for some time. They had announced, they announced something on Friday. They're going to close 35 more Kmart stores, and then they appended it on Monday to add 8 Sears stores, which will include the Sherrifville Appliance and Hardware on Indianapolis Boulevard, which it's in the it's across from Shops on Main. It's in the Town Square Shopping Center. It's been one of the big box anchors there for quite some time, and they had just closed another Sears Hardware just down the street, like maybe a year ago. They've been closing locations left and right. They closed multiple Kmarts, the one in Merrillville, Chesterton, LaPorte. They've been radically scaling back their footprint, not just in Northwest Indiana, but across the nation. The only Sears stores we have left were Merrillville, Michigan City, and Portage, and then the only Kmarts left are Griffith and Valparaiso. Unfortunately, Sears was once the largest retailer in the entire United States, but time has passed them by. They built the Sears Tower. They established the catalog business. It's a very illustrious company, but they've just struggled to find a place in the current marketplace. They've been overcome by a lot of these cheaper options, such as, the Walmarts of the world, and they have been forced to shrink and shrink and shrink, and then there's just a point where you just collapse in on yourself. And they're currently looking to cut like $1.25 billion out of annual cost. That was part of the reason for the closure of the Sherrifville store. They said they were focusing on closing less profitable locations. But they've been doing this for some time, and they're in the business press. They're definitely one of the companies that's been on death watch, because there doesn't seem to be a path forward. They've run into like liquidity problems before, and people wonder, how they're even going to keep the doors open. But it's just sad because it has a brand that has a lot of resonance with people. It's a brand that people really appreciate. Like what my brother worked at one in college. It's a very, it's been a staple here on the landscape for some time, but it looks like it's eventually going to join the list of like Montgomery Ward and a lot of these bygone brands. Cause it's, eventually there's going to be no stores left to close.
At some point, it turns into I guess you could say they're kind of at near the, if they're not already, they're probably very close to nearing the event horizon, as you would see in a black hole here, that things are disappearing fast down the hole, and that's certainly going to be the case with the Sears stores, to be sure. I know that, and you mentioned too, the comments here recently that the CEO Eddie Lampert had to make, I guess, at least he did on blog here, about the additional stores closing and part of the problem and why they had to change the strategy even more dramatically than what they've had so far. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Are there many people that we know of here, at least as these latest closings of the Sears stores in Northwest Indiana concerned that are being affected by this one?
This is a national problem. This isn't unique to Northwest Indiana. This has been just yesterday. Jim Marie announced that they're going to close their store in the Southlake Mall. Like retail stores have just been closing left and right, big box, small stores. It's just there's been such a shift to online commerce. It's not that everyone is shopping online, but enough people are where the business model these brick-and-mortar stores used to have is not working out so well anymore. It's taking away just enough of their revenue to where, these stores have to be performing very well and to survive in the current environment. And we've just seen just a slew of store closures, not just in Northwest Indiana, but nationally. But, like, we've lost H.H. Craig. We've lost Gander Mountain. We've lost MC Sports. It's just like it feels, as a business writer, it feels like every week I'm covering like another store closing in 2017. It's just been a very tough environment
for retailers to operate in. And I'm afraid, too, this is going to have long-lasting repercussions because a lot of jobs are disappearing as a result of this, hundreds of them. And then it's an entry-level job for a lot of people. It's a fallback job for a lot of people. If they, you know, get laid off for a position or something, you could go to the department store. Like, maybe they're not the best-paying jobs or whatever, but they play an important part in the overall ecosystem of the labor market.
Yeah.
And then these opportunities are vanishing, and they're not going to come back. And, like, Amazon is only going to have so many warehouses where they can, you know, fulfill orders, and it's not going to replace all these brick-and-mortar stores that are shuttering.
Yeah, they've expanded the number of warehouses they have around because of their business expanding, but you can only grow so fast and you can only add so many warehouses, you know, before you start having problems and having too many warehouses and people out there working and kind of the balance is out of the business, I suppose, too. So one of the other stories that you had we wanted to be sure to cover today, Joseph, was the word from Comcast about a new mobile Wi-Fi service here in Northwest Indiana. Tell us about that, please.
Yes, they've launched a new, there's been, you know, a lot of people are on their phones now more than anything, and it's kind of geared more toward the mobile phone user. We're going to be one of the first places in the Midwest to have access to this. They're rolling it out nationally, so it's just a matter of how they're rolling it out, but it's basically, as a internet user, you would gain access to all, like, you know, there are 1.5 million hotspots in Illinois and Northwest Indiana. It provides internet for both the home and on the go. And they're setting it up so it actually shows some more flexibility than some of these companies have in the past. They're letting people switch between like an unlimited plan and a buy the gig for usage plan. And then they will throttle the speeds though for like high using customers if you're using more than 20 gigabytes per month, like if you're doing a ton of streaming or video games or whatever. But they are... we're one of the first people to get this service in the Midwest because of the proximity to Chicago.
Now, has it kicked in already? Is the Xfinity store there in Hobart, Oregon?
They have. It's available. You can obviously get it online or you know, order it over the phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's also available at the Comcast store in Hobart by the South Lake Mall. And then... but it's tailored more toward you can use it for home internet, but it's tailored explicitly toward people who are using online a lot on their phones.
Joseph Pete is business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. A lot of stories involving business news here in the region in the recent days. And Joseph, as always, thank you very much for spending the time with us to explain them and giving us some insight into these stories as well, too. And I'm sure that we will have more, and we'll have you back on again on Reporters Roundtable Thursday real soon.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you for being with us as listeners to Regionally Speaking on Reporters Roundtable Thursday. I'm Chris Nolte. The panelists who have joined us today on the program, Giles Bruce with the Times, along with Joseph Pete with the Times, and Bob Cassarda with the Times of Northwest Indiana for your contributions, not only in the stories that you put online and in print, but also to hear on Regionally Speaking today. Have a great weekend. Looking forward to being back with you on Monday with more topics here in the region. And, of course, tomorrow it's another Best of Casual Fridays with Jerry Davich and Karen Walker.